And welcome back to the show, everyone. My name is Brian Elam. I will be your host on this episode of the Be Successful series. And today, I believe we're going to have a very interesting and also timely conversation. I have Doreen Rivers with us here today. And Doreen has had an epic journey from what I can gather, from what I have researched, from the corporate world to the education world to an author, to a photographer, an illustrator, and now delving into the very current topic of AI. So I am very excited for this conversation. Doreen, thank you so much for coming on.
Brian, so great to be here. And it's fun that we're in the same city because we have some of the same experiences and we can share those and give some good insights and educational information to your listeners.
Absolutely. I'm excited to get into it. So let's just dive right in with what you mentioned. Yes, we are both in Arizona. We're both in the Valley of the Sun. And have you lived here all your life, or are you a transplant like, I don't know, 98% of the people that are here?
I'm a transplant. I've lived here three times, and I've managed to stay here the last 8 years, and I don't intend to move. I move a lot because of startups. I help businesses that will call me and want me to come and help them start their businesses, set up systems and processes, get global expansion going and logistics and product development. And then after a year and a half or two, I'll hand them the company and say, here's the baby, don't kill it. And then I'm off to another state to start another company. So that's been most of my career.
Okay, amazing. And yeah, let's just dive right into that because obviously you've done so much, like I mentioned in the open, in your career and in your life. Where did you start out? Like, what was, I don't know, professional job one after all your education for Doreen?
Well, if you want to go way back, when I was eight, I decided that I needed some money, and all the kids in the neighborhood had lemonade stands. And I'm thinking, I really need to do something different because I don't want the competition. And what can I do that'll be fun and interesting that people will buy? So my brother and I took those old metal ice cube trays and we filled it with Kool-Aid. And then halfway through, and the trick is to remember to put the toothpick in so it becomes a little tubesicle. And we sold those for 2 cents, which is twice as much as a lemonade going for a penny. And we had most of the clients on the street within the week. And that was actually my first business. And I was an entrepreneur, I suppose, since birth. And it just started showing up when I was eight and never quit. And as far as after the educational track, that's a little of a technical question because I got my first baccalaureate degree. And then I had five kids in 5 years and raised them. And then I had to learn how to support them and bring in money. So I created businesses along the way. And at any given time, I suppose during that period, I had something going that was bringing in money. And then I created my consulting company after they were gone and some other entrepreneurial endeavors. I was able to dive into those and doing something with those. So it never stopped. It just kind of had different flavors along the way.
Yep. That's the story of a born and bred entrepreneur right there. I love it how you went back to all the way at eight. And I used to make those popsicle Kool-Aid things too when I was a kid. I never sold them though. I just wanted to eat them.
Well, we probably did both. We probably ate more than we sold.
Excellent. And so when you started your consultancy company, I'm assuming that that had to do with the fact that you had already started multiple entrepreneur ventures and had those be successful. And so you took those skills and that knowledge out into the public to help other businesses that were kind of struggling or needed to expand, right?
That's absolutely right. And in the course of all of that, I would be brought in with companies who had matured and wanted to exit. And so I went and got my SEC licenses, FINRA licenses for being able to do mergers and acquisitions, which was a whole new world for me. I was really great at the consulting part and putting companies together and making them better. The financial part was hard for me. My brain wasn't geared to do numbers. It was geared to do words and pictures and concepts and processes and systems and engineering kinds of things. But I was really glad I did it, and it was a whole new avenue to add to my consulting business. And since then, I have kind of geared back on the consulting and on the M&A because I recently launched a new company that's in AI, and it's all I can do to keep up with what is happening in AI. It changes daily. And so it requires all my attention to do that, and it's been a good thing, and I'm loving what I'm doing. And the trick is, if you can get up every day and you can say work is more fun than fun, you have chosen the right thing to do.
Absolutely agree with that. And so I wanted to go back and touch a little bit on the vision of an entrepreneur. Because what and you said it even back when you were 8 years old, looking at the lemonade stands and thinking, I don't want to be just another one of those. I want to do something interesting, something different. And I was curious, what do you think is the most important aspect? Or is that it? Of being an entrepreneur and starting a new business is to essentially have that blue ocean idea or vision, or is it something else?
I believe it's something else. I think it starts with a vision, and the vision can change or morph over time. As you learn more about the industry you've chosen to create something in, you might figure out that this little tributary here looks better, or you want to refine it and have it look more like this. All those things are changeable, and they should be. But I think the one overriding principle that never leaves is that you must have grit. I have a personal motto, and it says, grit knows no limits. And what that means is that it doesn't matter what comes up, you will figure it out and you will keep going. As soon as you quit, you're defeated. If you never quit, you're never defeated. And it takes grit to do that. In the book I launched last year, it's called Brain to Bank: How to Get Your Idea Out of Your Head and Cash In. And the first chapter is, what is your why? Your why is, why are you doing this? If you don't know that and you're not clear on that, you don't have something to sustain you when it gets really hard. Your why will see you through, but you need to know what it is. And your why keeps you going, and you combine that with the grit and I will never quit attitude, you will get there.
Absolutely, absolutely right. And it's so interesting that you say that the grit is the most important thing because a lot of people when they try that first entrepreneurial venture and it doesn't work out or it doesn't work out the way that they think it will, they just tend to like, well, I guess I'm not meant to be an entrepreneur. Like, well, no, it just means that you're not meant to do that little sliver of an entrepreneur as business, try something else. Like you said, try another tributary. But as long as you're still out there going for it, and that is part of who you are as an entrepreneur, then it's never a failure. It's only a failure if you stop. And I think it's just so important to give people that permission. I found it so many times because I used to do entrepreneurship coaching. Kind of just like you, I built a business and learned all kinds of things not to do. And so I wanted to impart those lessons and help other people be successful. And so it's just that understanding and permission to give people that it's okay to change your mind. It's okay to move to something else in the entrepreneur world as just as long as you don't stop. How do you feel about or do you touch on that in the book about giving people permission to change their mind?
I look at it with this verbiage. People don't change their minds. They make different decisions based on new information. Now look at how that's analyzed, right? We have new information. Should we keep doing this, or is there a better path? Because now we know this. And you're right about what you should not do is just as important as what to do. And a person can say they're an entrepreneur, but what really defines an entrepreneur are your actions and your results. But it starts with, what are you going to do about it? I recently, last year, went to hike Kilimanjaro. Now, I'm not a hiker, I'm a biker. I road bike and I do sentries and things like that. But I was flying over Kilimanjaro a couple of times when I was in safari. And I'm thinking two things. One, this has been on my bucket list for 30 years. And two, you ain't getting any younger. So I'm thinking it's time to do Kilimanjaro. So I come home. I sign up with the reputable hiking company for Kilimanjaro. I buy my airline ticket. And then I sit down and write down a workout plan for the next 9 months. And I know that if I cheat myself on the workout plan, I'm not going to be successful. So I am very conscientious of getting up early in the morning, which is not my time of day, to go hiking before it gets 110 in Phoenix 3 or 4 times a week, because I know I want to summit. A business is the same way. You decide what you want to do, what do you have to do to get ready, and then you take the first step. When you take the first step, you've committed yourself to reach the summit. It doesn't matter what happens in between. What matters is you've decided to reach the summit. And the first step says, I'm going to get there no matter what it takes. That's hiking a mountain. That's biking a century. That's biking 500 miles rag dry in Iowa. That's starting a new business. It's the same principle.
I love how you can take literally an activity of r great magnitude, like hiking to the top of Kilimanjaro, and still relate it to business. Because it can feel like that to some people, especially if they are just getting started. It can feel like they're trying to get up Kilimanjaro, but it's just that, just like we were talking before, it's that grit to set the intention to make that decision. And then never stop. And I love how you pointed out you went home and you bought the airline tickets and you made the reservation to go up. Like you had already made the decision and you were putting an actual monetary stake in the ground. Like this is happening. It was almost a way to hold yourself accountable. Would you say that was right?
That is right. And I know that when I take the first step, I won't quit. And so in order for me to begin, I have to do the first step. What does that look like? But all the preparation in between before you're going to take the actual first step into the business, or the actual first step on a mountain, or the first pedaling, or the first rowing down a class five rapid, whatever it is that's challenging, you decide how you're going to prepare for that. And here's an example. So in Kilimanjaro, what stops people from summiting and reaching 19,341 feet is not the actual hike itself, it's the altitude, because it's so high and people get sick and they quit and they go back down. Well, here's what happens. As you go up on about, it's 7 days up, on day five, you start climbing to some pretty great heights. You're going to be reaching 14 and 15 and 16 to get ready to go to 19. They take you up for 2,000 feet and then they bring you down another 500 or 800 to sleep the night to acclimate to the altitude. That way your body gets used to it, and then you do the same thing for a couple nights in a row, and then you do a sprint of 4,000 feet to get to the top, and then you come back down the same day down to 15, stay overnight, go back down. Here's what I'm saying is that in business, when you find something that makes you feel like you can't breathe and you're going to die and it hurts, step back a little bit, come back down a little bit, and assess it and stay there and watch it and decide what you're going to do. Come up with your game plan, because you're not going to get beat. You're going to reach the summit. What do you need to do that? Step back and look at it, and then formulate your plan. And then the next day, you start hiking again. It's the same thing.
It sounds to me what you're illustrating is this concept of slowing down to speed up when it comes to business. Is that right? Have you familiar with that phrase?
Yeah, there's a book for that, right? Fast and Slow. And it talks about that. And that's right. And sometimes you're moving so fast, and whether that's out of fear or anxiousness or impulsiveness or whatever it is, sometimes you have to take a step back and assess it and say, am I going the right way? Am I going the right speed? Do I have the right people with me on the trail? And if any of those are a no, then you adjust that, then you continue. And business is that. And then those assessments should happen, well, at the end of every day and at the end of every week and at the end of every quarter. Those things need to happen. Nothing stays the same. What do you need to do differently to do it better and to do it well and to keep going?
Absolutely. You always have to take a look at what you're doing. If you're starting a business or in your middle or even at the advanced levels, especially at the advanced levels, it can get more complex, which I'm sure you're aware and have seen over and over again. And those analytics, that self-reflection becomes even more important. And so I want to jump into talking about the book here a little bit because there are, and you mentioned one of them earlier, there are tons, thousands of books to teach people how to start a business, how to run a business. What was missing in your mind from those books or from that conversation that inspired you to write Brain to Bank?
Well, I would say there's a couple things. In Brain to Bank, it's obviously the culmination of 30 years of starting businesses of my own and helping others to start their businesses. And along the way, I saw so many things that people did not do right or at all. And it cost them their business, or it cost them a lot of time and a lot of money to rectify. And so there's a section in every chapter. And it talks about what these people should have done, they didn't do, and what the end result was of that. And there are some people who just simply can't learn from others, but I'm hoping that all of you are ones that can actually learn from others and not have to make those mistakes. And they're in the book, and what not to do is as important as what to do. And so it says what to do because this obviously didn't work. So now do this. And at the end of each chapter is accelerated action. And there are places for you to write down what you're going to do and to move your business forward from what you just learned in that chapter. Now, that's what we talked about earlier, which is you can have all the information in the world, but if you don't apply it and use it and there's no action, there's no results. So I offer that in the book, the application of what you just learned. And I think most business books don't tell you what to do with it. They just tell you a bunch of stuff. So I wanted to change that.
I see. I see. So it becomes almost like a book and a course all in one right there.
That's exactly right.
Excellent. And if I understood you correctly, the way that people learn these lessons inside the book is through stories of other entrepreneurs that you have encountered, or are these just entrepreneurs and scenarios that you made up, but are from real. They happen.
They're all companies that I worked with. I obviously changed their names, but they're companies I worked with, and they're lessons those companies had to learn. And some of them were pretty dire, but they're real.
Well, there you go, folks. There's another reason right there to pick up the book Brain to Bank. Learn from the mistakes of high-level, highly functional businesses. That way yours doesn't go under. Oh, perfect. And I'll definitely include the link to that book on the Amazon down below in the comments. You guys can just click and go there and pick it up. All right. Well, let's get into the fun part now. Let's talk about AI and this new adventure that you're on, Savants. And
It
just
is
like
an
we
adventure.
were, yes, yeah, it totally is an adventure. We're all riding that wave right now. I'm using right now a CRM in my insurance business, Wealthy Consulting, to help reach out to people through AI. and keep them constantly, engaged with, supported, make sure they know I'm still here, asking if they need help. So it's a revolution wave we're all riding. And with us talking about the book and the course all in one type of situation, that is essentially what you've created, but a video version, a video that combines education in there. And talk a little bit about how that caught your attention and why you thought AI, this is where I need to be right now.
It kind of morphed, and I'm glad we talked about Brain to Bank first. In the past, I have created online courses before, and they're cumbersome, and they're time-consuming, and they're expensive, and it can take 6 months of working with a team of seven or eight people to pull together an online course and animations and soundtracks and narrations and all the things that go into that to make it interesting and fun to get your message across. So when I decided to make Brain to Bank into an online course, I knew what it would take because I'd done it before the traditional way. And I thought, AI's here. What AI can I use to make this easier? So I hired a consultant in AI to show me what platforms would be the best ones to use. And I brought in my web designer that I had worked with for 10 or 12 years for him to learn about it. And what I wanted to do was figure out an easy way to take the text that I had spent a year and a half or 2 years writing with 30 years of expertise and experience in it into this course. So I have the text. So I wanted to put the text in and create the online course. So I started putting together systems and processes. My PhD is in how to set up systems and processes for businesses. So my mind works that way anyway. So I'm setting up this system process, and about 2 months into it, I'm thinking, I am not creating an online course. I'm creating a platform that millions of other people could benefit from using for their own text. This is great for educators who want to make their boring lectures more interesting. And what if you could take those chapters that kids just won't read anymore and turn them into a micro module that was really fun to watch, and they actually learned it and they actually remembered it? Imagine what that would be like for education and for businesses who have to do training. No one wants to do training. Well, what if it was like entertaining and kind of fun? You would at least be able to get through it. It's great for entrepreneurs, for pitch decks to show investors what they're doing. It's great for authors. I know the book that I have, Brain to Bank, the hardback book, which sells for like $35, I'm making $1. What if I could turn that into a course and I was charging $1,000 for my course? Do you want $1 or do you want $1,000? It's a really big no-brainer. And you already spent your year and a half or two writing the book. What other revenue streams can we create from that? That's a lot of work. That's a lot of knowledge. And that's a lot of things that people really could use. What can we do? So that's how Savants.ai came to exist. And we just launched a week ago. And it went from concept to MVP in 7 months. And we continue to improve it on a daily basis. And it is for people who want to take the work they've already created in a text or create something new. You can write a children's book in there. I saw someone write a children's book in there, a brand new one. It was incredible. And it's fun. And so we call combining education and entertainment edutainment. What a great concept to get people who are stuck looking at their screen. Well, if they're already stuck looking at their screen, let's give them something fun to look at. So here's the videos. And
Absolutely.
that's the basis of Savants.
And I'm glad you touched on the edutainment portion of it because I definitely wanted to talk about that because you mentioned in the videos that I saw leading up to this how your platform essentially infuses the content with educational learning techniques and methodologies. And I was wondering if, just from a user perspective, how easily is that done? Or do you need to have a educational background or an educational consultant in order to put those pieces into place?
We're building the ability to accelerate learning and increase retention into our platform. And we have new things we're working on a daily basis. All you need is the text that you want to work with. And then you need to know what's that going to look like. Oh, I guess I'll choose realistic. Or why don't I choose comic book? Or maybe I want to do fantasy or pixel art. You choose. What do you want that to look like? What's the flavor and what's the mood and the feeling that you want your audience to have? Choose that first. Now choose the voice. Do you want? What do you want? Do you want a male voice, a female voice, a neutral voice? Do you want it to have an accent? Choose your voice because it's going to take your script and it's going to actually say that over the top of your video. And it's going to be fun and entertaining because you put together the visual and the audio aspects of it. Now, what music? The music is the other part that's going to create the mood for it. You can upload your logo at the end of it. You're going to push a button that says generate, and it's going to make your video. Now, you can download that and you can put it on an LMS like Thinkific or Kajabi, or if you're at the university, it's going to be Blackboard or Canva, or put it on YouTube, put it on Instagram, whatever you want. It's yours. And you
Right.
created it, and it's going to feel like you want it to feel because you have all these choices of what it's going to look like.
Right. And I think you kind of touched on what I was going to ask next is that all the videos that I saw on the site, they were obviously stylized to go along with the site, the color schemes, the way that the video looked, it flowed perfectly with that site that it was on. But it looked, and I don't know if it was the fantasy version of the platform, or if it was the cart animated version. But I was wondering, does it have a realistic video like you could put in, and it's almost like watching a movie?
There's one that's called cinematic and realistic. And it doesn't look like someone has you through their video lens, but it does look realistic as opposed to the ones that are more animated, like fantasy or comic book.
Okay. Yep, that's exactly what I was looking for, and what I was thinking you were saying. So that's good. That's definitely good, because like I said, it's not all gonna fit. Like, there's no one size fits all solution when it comes to this. And my curiosity is, with all of the AI tools that are out there and ways to incorporate this into businesses, if you are able to tell me, what back end are you using? Like, are you using something like Midjourney for the video creations, or still creations, or is what does that look like?
We API to a couple different existing AIs and bring those in, and that culminates into the video. And not to evade your question, but it changes. Who's offering the best thing that we can provide for our people and for our videos, and will change. So maybe it's Midjourney, or maybe it's DALL-E, or maybe it's Stable Diffusion. Maybe it's something else. And it changes.
I like that, because again, like we were talking before, AI, this is an ever evolving wave that we're riding. So it's good. I believe that it's good that you're offering that on the back end, and the user doesn't have to worry about it, that their experience and what their ability will have, it remains the same or will only expand as you go forward.
Well, that's right. Yeah, and you don't have to be a producer. The main thing I keep saying to the developers on a weekly basis is this has to be easy. You need to not have to know anything about sound levels or dissolving or transitions or whatever. It needs to be easy. 80% of the people want it easy. And then there's 20% that want all the bells and whistles and they want to change everything and they want to be able to do that like they're sitting in front of a big production studio with all that equipment. And that's great. They can do that. We have that as well. The biggest thing to remember is that most of the text to video are taking stock photography and using that for the images. We don't use stock photography. Every image has been created for your video, just for you. No one else is getting those images. They were made for you.
All right. I love that. And now let's talk about, 'cause I'm sure everybody is wondering, where can I find this? How much is it going to cost me? What does the economic model look like? So go into that. I know you've got the MVP product that has launched and it's out there. Are you doing any kind of like special pricing right now? Like buy once and never pay again, like some people do with their platforms. Like what does that look like for your platform?
Well, it's really a blanket statement, which is this is as low as it will ever be. We have four different levels, and basically you're going to buy finished minutes. So if you only need 3 minutes for a month, and 3 minutes gives you a 3 minute video, or a two and a one, or a 3 1 minute sizzles, and if that's all you need, then you'll pay $45 a month, and you will get to make 3 minutes of videos every single month. And then there are bigger levels as we go along. But that's a great place to start. And there's a free trial where you can go in and just create a mini video, a very small one. But you'll be able to see the process. You'll be able to see what things you get to choose from and what that looks like. And it'll say, this is what the process looks like. And you'll go, well, that was easy.
Well, that's what we want them to say, right? We want that seamless, user-friendly experience. Absolutely. Absolutely. And with the 3 minutes per month at that lowest tier, does that roll over? Like say I don't use the full 3 minutes, does that roll over to the next month?
It doesn't roll over because the subscription model is this is what we want you to use every month. But every time you do a video, you get better at what you're doing and you know better to, and you understand better what you want. I just want to give you a quick comparison. So I took a 1 minute sizzle that I did for Brain to Bank, and that's on the braintobank.com. You can see that sizzle there. And I broke it down, and it took seven different people to pull together those elements. There's a narrator, there's an editor, there's sound effects, there's all the copywriters, all the things that went into that. There were seven people. It took me 40 hours to manage them to get it done. And it was $2,200 for me to produce 1 minute. Now, that's actually pretty average for a 1 minute really great video. Well, what if you create that 1 minute video on Savant? You just spent an hour or two and $15. That again is your second no-brainer.
Absolutely. It brings the professional level of product to the average user, the one that doesn't know coding, has no idea how to use a video editing software. Yeah, absolutely. Great stuff. So again, guys, link is going to be below in this video or in the description over on Spotify. So you can click, go over there, check it out, get that free trial. Play around, get your first little taste of what Savant can do for you, and see if it's for you. And so, Doreen, I want to have maybe just a little bit of fun here. I have my own hypothesis, if you will, about what AI is going to do to education. You being in the edutainment industry, I'm keen to hear your thoughts on this. But my hypothesis is AI develops. We are going to see less teachers in the school systems because all they really need to do is facilitate the learning that AI is going to provide to the students because it has the ability to recognize very quickly their particular learning style and implement that learning style. So every student is going to be getting a one-on-one personalized education and the teaching staff needed to facilitate that is going to go way down. What are your thoughts on that?
I really believe that AI is here to augment and assist teachers. I don't know that it will actually replace them. You can't replace understanding a student and the empathy they might need that day, or the culture of the classroom you're trying to create that teaches how to help other people and to see people in need and what to do about that. The EQ things, I don't think AI will ever be able to do. I think that takes humans to do that. And to get rid of that would be a terrible thing to do. I look at AI no matter what that is, whether that's a Alexa or a Siri or a bot that I put on my website, whatever the AI is an assistant to make something better, to run smoother, to help faster, and do a good job at certain things. I don't think it's here to replace us as humans. Humans do what humans do. They will not be able to do that.
Very interesting. Yeah, and that's I broached this question to another person that I interviewed, and their thoughts were basically along the same lines as yours, that it won't necessarily replace a teacher or a human, but it'll just augment their ability. And I don't know, I guess I kind of like playing devil's advocate for the AI because we just don't know what we don't know. And with this being such a young technology and how far we may be able to carry it and it develop, I don't know. Maybe we will get to a point one day where those EQ factors can be taken up by the system. And we've got a robot teaching the class who can change the mood of the atmosphere if the students are feeling a certain way in order to help elevate them up. I have no idea. I just know we are very, very young in this AI adventure and where it's going to go. To say that we know where it's going to end up, I think is just a fallacy. But yeah, I don't know. It's just an exciting journey. I'm so excited to see where it goes and how it develops.
I am too, and I'm happy to be a part of it, and I'm going to do my best to steer it in the favor of humanity and education.
Absolutely. That is definitely my intention as well, is to use it in a way to help bring us together. Because we are so with this internet world, the social media world, we are more quote unquote connected than ever before, but most people feel more disconnected than ever. And I think if we can use AI and those tools to help reach out and engage with each other and bring them into a real world scenario, I really feel that that's the way to help use this system to heal us as a society. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I think it takes everyone deciding that AI is not the bad guy. How do we use this to our advantage and to make us better?
Yeah, absolutely. You have to hold that intention. And like we were talking earlier, you have to have that grit that you're going to use this tool to better humanity, to better yourself and your business. And when you do that, you open doors to, again, bring people back to you, reconnect that community. And it's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it's exciting.
It definitely is. It definitely is. Well, Doreen, this has been an amazing conversation. I am so glad that we got to connect with you and hear your story and understand what you're working on. And again, everyone, links down below. Go click, go find out, get the book, get the free trial, connect with Doreen. And just thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Brian. It's been great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. All right, everyone. If you like the show, make sure you like it, subscribe, share the show with your friends, any other entrepreneurs that need to see this, need to be aware of this tool, share this episode out. And peace. I will see you in the next one.